So hi everyone. For those of you who don't know me, but I think I know most of you here, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer at the network. And this is one of the very first affinity groups that we started, 2.5 years ago. And now there are 24, and it's still growing. It's amazing. And one of the best parts of my job is that I get to connect colleagues from around the country, Canada and Israel, together so that you can talk and connect and outside of this on your own when you have questions and concerns. And another great part of this is I get to work with Elaine Rotenberg, who is been such a great partner in this and such a dedicated affinity group chair, always thinking about what is going to be the next important topic for you all to talk about. And it's always a delight to work with you. So
Thanks,
thank you
Lisa. Thank
for
you.
being in that role.
Happy to. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. So who has never been to one of the clinical affinity groups before? It does feel like it's been a long time, but Francine has never been. Francine, and you're with
Fabiola.
Andreas. Everybody else has been here before. Gotcha. Oh, we've got a few more people joining. Hi, Rachel. So what we put in the invite, which, and I don't know whether it resonates, is first of all, I want to just say, how are y'all doing? Because I think it's still exhausting. Show of hands, still exhausting clinically? Yes? No? Anybody still exhausted? Okay. Has it any show of hands if it you're finding in some odd way that it's actually even getting more challenging? Show of hands. Okay, excellent. Look at this. Look at this.
Unanimous.
This is my favorite group because I think that's true. I was saying to Lisa, we put this agenda together, and sitting with a group of clinical people makes me just want to acknowledge that before we even proceed, because I know from all the groups that I sit with that for some reason right now it's a little weird. And when I wrote the invite, what I started thinking about was, where are we all now in terms of what may be some kind of a transition because of the vaccines? What may be, now that we're doing virtual stuff, is anybody noticing issues about, like, what are the boundaries? Like, where do we work? And I've had therapists coming to me now who sort of like are doing private practices like around the world. What are our catchment areas? Now it's interesting. My new colleague in Boca, right? We share the same county. And so, like, think about it. There's like, sort of boundary cutoffs in terms of service areas, but anybody can call anybody from any place. And we can work 24 hours a day. It's just a global blessing. So that was just a little joke. So I just thought I would throw out where we are, if that's a topic that people want to spend some time sharing, asking questions of each other. I'm going to just stop talking to see who wants to talk. Wendy raised her hand.
So I apologize if this is something that you might have discussed before. I haven't been on this very often because it coincides with our QI meetings, but what I'm finding in Detroit that's happening quite a bit is we have clients that are either coming to us and then moving to different states, or actually are in different states asking for services from RJFS Detroit because of the telehealth environment. So obviously, we have to kind of take a hard stance on making sure we're servicing people within our state boundary lines. But also, I want to be cognizant of referring someone to someone who could connect with a JFS near them. So that kind of brings me to a really big quandary of, I don't know if there's an internal referral system that we can kind of get to when someone in Detroit is saying, hey, I live in New York, but I would like to receive services. And then I can say, well, my colleague in New York is such and such.
I love that you brought that up, Wendy, because I actually just had that situation come up with needing a it was the director for long-term care services, because I got a call from somebody who's got a family member on the other part of Florida, and I needed to sort of look at the website, figure out, make sure I was getting the right person. It might be an interesting thing for us, like, for example, for all the clinic, unless it's already there, Lisa.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is I can easily send a list to all of you now that we have Neon and you guys are entering in Neon, the agency, the name, the email, and the, you know, state that where they work.
What is Neon?
That's our database.
Oh, okay.
That's our database. So, and I think there are like 180 people in the list, the clinical list. In Neon, so that could help.
That would be incredibly helpful.
Or, yeah, I think that would be easy. I don't think anyone would be upset that email is out with their names on it, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Does that work for people? Does that sound like a good idea? Is that,
Wendy,
would that help you?
Wendy? Were you asking more for a specific, like, warm handoff kind of situation as opposed to just having a list?
That's how you do a warm handoff.
That's how you do the warm handoff. So, yeah. Like, when I get the list, like, for example, Peggy, what I will do is I would get the list. And if I knew that, like, Dan was in charge of all things clinical in Atlanta, I would pick up the phone personally and I would call Dan. I'd say, Dan, I've got somebody here, you know, who's a VIP or who's somebody from this community. Can you please, like, make nice to them? And can I tell you they're going to call, or can you give, you know, I would make those, connect those dots, you know, that way. And then Dan would say, of course, Elaine, give me their name. I will add it to the list of the other things I have to do today. But I think we really do try. It's interesting. One of the beautiful things about this network is that I think the more that these affinity groups happen and we really connect real faces to real people in real cities, it's really nice to be able to say, you know, I know somebody in LA, let me do that. So maybe having access to those lists in an easier way would be good. Yes, Karen.
I love this. I'm really glad, Wendy, you brought it up. And I know it would be limited depending what's, you know, how many states. This obviously isn't 50 states represented here, but and a few of you could probably relate. I'm in Florida, and a new challenge is we have a lot of people who winter here and get connected. Mm-hmm. And while I anticipate things will continue to change, currently the law is, you know, we can practice anywhere in Florida, but the snowbirds go home. And it's already starting where they're like, oh, now that we have telehealth, we can keep working together.
Right.
And it's like, unless the clinician is also licensed in their state, not an option. And that's rare. So this is exciting because it is challenging when you're working with somebody, you have that connection and it's like, good luck, you know, or you're just blindly like Googling practitioners in Denver, practitioners in Michigan. So this, you know, if there is a JFCS in Detroit, even if they don't live in Detroit, there's the possibility of some kind of linkage, you know, if you have a practitioner who could operate through telehealth throughout the state.
I think that's so important. And then there's the issues even in terms of like within the state. So like, I mean, I don't know how many, we have like 5 JFSs in Florida, and it's like, you know, we're still trying to be very careful. Like if I had somebody calling my agency who lived in Sarasota, even though, and I don't know if that's true for other states, it probably is, right? There are other states that have multiple JFSs. So we'll be really careful at our like intake level that if somebody calls and they're from Sarasota, well, even though my therapist could see them, I won't take that business because that's Karen's business for her agency. And same thing with Francine, like Boca del Rey, and I'm sure they told you that spiel down there, Francine, is that we're really careful in terms of where people live, you know? But it's tricky because we're only doing that, all of us sort of on good faith, because in our states, you can really see anybody. But so it's
now really-
telehealth. So it's pretty interesting.
Although, Elaine, that brings up an interesting point because occasionally—
Oh, I just lost everybody. I can't see anybody. Can you still see me?
Yes, we can see you.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's another interesting point I hadn't thought about with telehealth in terms of definitely maintaining a boundary. But what about if we occasionally will run up a wait list and we hate to do that and the people want Jewish Family and Children's Services and we just don't have staff.
So that is
referring over to you.
That is a beautiful example.
If they were willing to do telehealth.
Absolutely. And so that would be an interesting, and that would be like,
there should be wonderful.
That'd be a wonderful thing. And I would want us to, you know, kind of have something, we would speak to each other. In other words,
we should.
Does anybody know whether or not the waivers for licensure crossing state lines has been changed, or are we all still waived, I believe?
We're still waived, I think, until June, right?
It depends on the state. So for example, Charlotte is really close to South Carolina, and South Carolina has for months and months said you only have 60 days. I mean, months they've said 60 days, there's no waiver. So you really have to look at the state where your client is. There's no national waiver.
Oh.
Charlotte is only like our JFS is only about 15 or 20 minutes from the South Carolina line. So we've actually just gotten our therapist licensed in South Carolina to solve this problem because we have clients who live in South Carolina and drove. It's literally, it's almost the same distance to my house as it is to parts of South Carolina. So, but South Carolina has, and I even said to them, I emailed the board and I said, I have two therapists pending licensure. And they said, you must immediately stop seeing those clients, even if they're long-term clients, if you've seen them for more than 60 days until you have received licensure from us.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, now that could just be South Carolina because they like, just be South Carolina, but I would definitely be very careful about thinking that there's any kind of waiver nationally.
Right. Yeah, we didn't have any waiver in Pennsylvania either.
I think this has been such a challenging piece of what we've gone through in the last year, in that, you know, we've had waivers of copays and deductible. We've had waivers for licensure crossing state lines. For some of us, that's the case. For some of us, it's not. To find out whether or not the client's waivers have been reinstated has been, ask clients to call their insurance companies. Their insurance companies don't even know what's happening. So it's really been a very challenging mess, really. It's just a mess.
Yeah. Carlos, were you going to say something? Did Elaine just drop off? Yeah, Carlos, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to share with regards to the sharing clients. Here in New Jersey, a few months ago, actually, we encountered that issue. We started to see an uptake on need. Started to create a wait list, and all the executive directors from all the JFCSs in New Jersey actually got together, connected all the clinical directors of the JFCSs in New Jersey, and we kind of came up with this distribution list, essentially, of especially because now of telehealth, if there is if we encounter a situation where we have we're looking specifically for JFCSs that may have like very specific niche expertise, and maybe I get a referral for a client who's looking for this very specific type of therapy or therapist, I will know to contact Jeff who's in Atlantic County and say, here's the person that you may want to contact, because as long as it's within the state, it can, it was a nice way of connecting within the state.
That's a great idea.
And
right?
Then it kind of morph into, if I happen to have a wait list and you have a lot of openings, then we can always filter pass or refer to you. Especially because one of the things that we keep hearing from consumers, and I don't know if this is the experience with all of you guys, is that a lot of the clients that are seeking services or prospective clients are seeking services. The first thing that it tells us, but I call this other place, this other practice, they're not returning calls, or they're not accepting it.
Right.
Clients, or they have 6 months, 3 months, a year long list. So if there are situations with other JFCSs, which there have been, where they do have some availability with their therapist and the insurance the match, then yeah, we can facilitate some access of service care.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a really, Elaine's coming back on. I think that's a really good point. Like for JFSs in certain communities, I mean, certain states, like in Connecticut, where I used to work, where Eve works, if you set up some sort of a system where, you know, Eve, you may be really good with alcohol, you know, with addiction. Sorry, guys. Someone else may be really good. That's okay with, you know, domestic violence. You know, you could really do that kind of referral. I think that's a really smart idea. But for some agencies like Rhode Island, you're the only JFS there. So you could take, and you could take clients from anywhere in Rhode Island, right? It could really build your practice, your agency's practice.
What did I miss?
You'll catch up.
No, thanks. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So do people have other thoughts about this boundarylessness of telehealth? Yeah, Roseanne, always. Let's hear from you.
So, you know, we serve older adults as our target population. We have a JCFS that serves through the lifespan with our local sister agency. But what's really been nice for us is the ability to expand our boundaries. Because we do home visits to older adults, we had a limited geographic boundary that we could physically reach. You just can't have our therapists in the office and on the road. So it's been amazing. Now we can serve other parts of the Chicago area. We're serving the suburbs, Hyde Park, other areas where there's significant Jewish populations that weren't served by our, certainly by us, and also where JCFS didn't have an office. So it's been really nice to offer that.
Has it caused any problems for anybody? Challenges? I should say challenges, not problems. None of us.
I think our challenge is we really can't keep up with the demand. I mean, I've got a waiting list literally of about 50 people that we can't serve. We're adding new clinicians, but adding new clinicians during a pandemic is a whole nother story.
Right.
And kind of onboarding someone, but that's really my biggest challenge is us being able to kind of not have a waiting list and keep up with demand. It's been fairly impossible.
Well, Dan, do you know if there are other states can work with, you know, Georgian residents? I mean,
again, it's all about the individual states.
Right, but maybe Florida can work with Georgia, or there's some sort of
I don't think so.
No.
But even so, I don't know anybody. I don't know anyone who's got a spot. People call and they're, you know, they're desperate. And, you know, I try and reach out to as many people as I know. And, you know, it's so interesting. I belong to a networking group for divorce professionals because that's my specialty. And we've lost many of some of our members. And people were wondering, you know, why aren't people coming to this networking thing? Well, nobody needs networking now because everybody's so full up on work. There's no time to network, nor is there any need to network. I cannot find one therapist who has a slot, not one. Not even the bad ones.
I know that. That's the interesting issue, right?
So a little concerning.
Carlos?
So one of the concerns that was raised on my end with some of the clients, the one clients that tried to refer off to other places, and kind of like in just thinking in the future, ideally when things reopen, and when the insurances, because we take insurance, we take just about all the insurances. Our concern is if the insurance companies are going to revert back to pre-pandemic benefits where telehealth may not be covered or may be very restrictive to their specific places. In which case, if we do take, let's say I get a client that is, from Pittsburgh, you know, I'm licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and New York, I could see essentially any individual from there. But let's say I get a referral from Albany or Pittsburgh and I start seeing that client, but then that client may eventually then we go back to normal restriction. Insurance has changed the restrictions now. The relationship may be interrupted. I may not be able to see the client, or again, like that's one of the concerns that keeps coming up, kind of knocking at the door every time that we do have a conversation with clients, when we do refer to other places, even within the state, just because then if I have someone who would refer, I'm in southern New Jersey, I'm close to Philadelphia, I refer somebody up in North Jersey, once things go back to normal, is this person going to then have to go to New Jersey to keep the therapist, to travel? So like that's, telehealth has been fantastic in providing access to therapy. Our no-show rates have gone down significantly. And much like you guys, we're very, very busy. We have, I think, like 40 people on our wait list right now. But then there's the concern of when this is over, if it's over, how is telehealth going to be something that will be able to remain, which I hope it is.
I think telehealth is here to stay.
I think telehealth will remain. I think our challenge is going to be doing the hybrid, you know, because some are, you know, I don't know if some of you are starting to see patients like wanting to come back in, and then what are we doing about that? And
I think the hybrid's going to be something that we're going to definitely have to address, but I do believe telehealth will pay less.
That's interesting.
Yes. Ultimately, I think they will pay less because they did prior to the pandemic.
You mean insurance companies will pay less?
That's correct.
Interesting.
I think this is a great argument for large groups and organizations to see our part of our role as advocates and public policy.
The network will do.
Because
if that's true, Peggy,
issues for all of us and for our constituents, that we need to be pushing for what we need and what they need as best we can.
You know, that's very interesting because I imagine the first place we would see it, which is always the sort of template for all of this, is Medicare. And so if Medicare changes their rates for telehealth, I mean, that would be pretty concerning.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the population that I'm finding is going to want to stick with telehealth because what they have said to me is this is just so much easier than me driving, especially in inclement weather. So I think that really is going to be a challenge.
Well, I'm also concerned about them going back to requiring video for Medicare, because a lot of our older adults, they don't have the technology, and phone only has been a lifesaver.
We've been very worried about that in Detroit.
FaceTime, though.
Wait, what?
Most of them can do FaceTime.
Okay.
We haven't found that.
Wendy, what were you going to say?
Oh. Detroit's very worried about that as well, because we have a lot of older adults and people that don't have technology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have any of you had your clients start coming back yet? Are people doing face-to-face in-office work yet?
Is it with a mask?
Yeah, how are you guys doing? Because we're doing a little bit, but how are you guys doing it? Who are doing it?
So I can say that we've done, we've really limited it to children and a few older adults. Everybody is wearing a mask. We're not having people use the waiting rooms. They're waiting in their cars until the therapist comes out to get them, really. And we're not doing back-to-back appointments in the same office. Mm. So we're rotating offices. And cleaning and, thoroughly cleaning, and we're screening folks before they come in. It's been really challenging.
So you're cleaning between sessions?
So the protocol we're following is you have the session, you wait 15 minutes for everything to settle, then you clean, then it dries. So because we have so few therapists in the office, my therapists that are in the building are able to use kind of rotate different offices and give each office time to kind of sanitize, for lack of a
word. Fumigate.
Yeah.
Are the therapists doing the cleaning?
Some, yeah. I mean, they're wiping things down.
I can't imagine sitting with a mask on doing therapy. I just can't. That must be so challenging. And I understand that we've all learned how to read people's eye language over the last year. But I just think it's so challenging for us to sit there with a mask.
Once you do it, it's really not as difficult wearing the mask as you might think.
Are you doing it?
I'm doing some, mostly still telehealth, but we have been given the green light, and with some of my adolescents, only three, now four, I'm seeing them weekly in person. I only work 3 days a week, and we have a satellite counseling location separate from our main JFS. Our main JFS shares space with Jewish Federation, and Federation still won't allow anyone not employed to be in the building. So for our one counselor is located at that location, and she can't see anybody in person because of the Federation rule. I'm the only counselor at our satellite space right now doing in-person work. So we have very little traffic. It's just me there when I'm there. I don't have anybody use the waiting room. If I'm not ready for them, I text them, wait. Otherwise, I instruct them to come in at the appropriate time. In terms of cleaning, it's really not difficult. I have a bag, a canister of wipes, and I just wipe down the chair they were sitting in. They've learned that I open all the doors. So they come in, they're really not touching anything but their chair arms.
If you are sitting more than 6 feet away from them, would you unmask?
I don't. I'm probably sitting about 10 or 11 feet away. We're on opposite corners.
But you still leave your mask on?
We do. And I'm vaccinated.
They're inside.
We're inside. And also we have an online COVID screening form, a quick questionnaire for symptoms that the client or parent fills out before the appointment. I can share that with anyone who's interested.
Actually, that'd be great to see, Rachel.
Let me turn my mic.
What are you showing us, Dan?
His face, his mask.
No, I gotta jump out for a second.
Oh. What kind of mask is that? It's got a lot going on in there.
I wanted to share with folks at in our aging population where people are getting vaccinated, I will tell you things are suddenly starting to move in terms of reopening. I spent my first full day at the office this week, and we're talking about going back into assisted living because the entire community has been double vaccinated. Our therapists have been double vaccinated at this point. It's like all of the sudden we are being thrown into this, what's going to happen with our hybrid services. So once people do get vaccinated and once your team gets vaccinated, the advice we're getting and the protocol that's coming and the CDC changes that are coming that we're being advised on that are coming are pretty encouraging, pretty hopeful that we're going to be moving back sooner than I had definitely imagined. And we're being told that if people are vaccinated and the therapist is vaccinated, the risk of infection is like below 1%. You should still mask, you should still have 6 feet of distance, but if you can open a window and or have an air filtration machine, if you can follow these protocols, you should be able to see your client either in the office, and we will be going to do home visits with older adults who are vaccinated, which we haven't been doing. So things are suddenly moving for us.
Mm-hmm. Can I add something too? We also have a COVID, what's it called? Like an in-person pandemic consent form. So it's a special additional consent form to be seen in person during the pandemic.
That's interesting. Did you guys just create that yourselves?
I created that, but I'm trying to remember now. I might have gotten it from the APA website. There was a lot of information on their site.
Well, here, send it to me so I can put it in the resource file in case anyone's actually interested in looking at it for their agencies.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, what I'm hearing, Elaine, I don't know if you know this, but I'm sure you do, is that so many therapists, yeah, they may be, vaccinated and everyone else is vaccinated, but they don't want to go back to work.
They don't want to go back to work. And that's why, you know, the question I brought up in terms of the whole boundary issue, it's like, you know, do we change anything? I mean, why do we have to come back to the office? Do we go back to the office all the time? I mean, do we let therapists still work at home? What about vaccines? I mean, my HR person says you can't ask people whether or not they've been vaccinated. It's like, Rachel, you're on mute.
From an HR perspective, I know you can't make you can't make an employee be vaccinated. But what about clients? So I know, like, how do you can you ask for proof that a client is vaccinated before they come in, or do you just take their word for it? Because that's so.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know what people are doing about that. We had a discussion in our senior management meeting this morning about that, and somebody said, "Well, maybe we need to, because we can't ask employees, you know, to get the vaccine unless your agency makes a policy, which I don't know if anybody did, that you have to be." You know, vaccinated to work here.
I think that's a HIPAA issue, and I don't think you can ask them.
Right.
Yeah, and you've never asked about any other vaccinations.
Exactly.
Why would right to ask about this?
So the idea that you go back because everyone's, we're not doing any in-person services and it's not my decision. So, but the idea that like you go back because everyone's vaccinated, how and when does that happen? At least I'm in North Carolina. You know, we may have many clients who are never going to get vaccinated. So then are we waiting till herd immunity?
Exactly.
Because that's a whole other time frame. Because you can't say bring your vaccination card and then you can schedule your appointment. I'm fairly certain you're not allowed to say that. So.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I'd be interested.
You're not allowed to say that.
I feel like we should be, right? But so it's funny is that in Israel, I know they're creating this green card that people are going to have to like show that they're vaccinated. But
as a social service agency, I know that you weren't allowed to take, I just read this. You weren't allowed in a food insecurity social service agency, they weren't allowed to take people's temperature because it's a HIPAA violation, as opposed to a restaurant that can take your temperature because it's not a social service agency.
Now that's interesting.
So I think that it's a HIPAA issue.
So then the other question that came up, somebody brought up this morning in my agency, they said, well, maybe we need to put a sign on the front door that says something like, please know that something like we have not required our employees to take the vaccine or something. I mean, you know, in terms of do people coming into a hospital, like if you go to a hospital or a doctor's office now, don't you assume that your doctor has been vaccinated? Are people going to assume that we've been vaccinated?
I assume that. Tara says no, she doesn't assume it.
Well, one of the things, it's funny you mentioned that because we, this past Monday, we started to have a conversation with the managers and like, about a plan for reopening. For counseling, we've actually have been able to go in and like in a very case-by-case basis do sessions in person. But for everybody else, not yet. So we've been trying to come up with different plans and strategies. And one of the managers actually brought up the idea of like, you still, even though everybody may be vaccinated, can't really know that for sure. So you have to treat everybody as if they're not, period. And no, case in point, like we, even in like just this possible plan of going back into the office is, you know, we're likely looking at doing like an A and B group. A group goes on Mondays and Tuesdays, B group goes on Wednesday and Thursday or something along those lines, just to have a smaller size of personnel in the office. We're prioritizing which groups of employees have to go into the office versus the ones that can continue to do to work from home, looking at PPE, what exactly we're going to need for the offices. We actually, I want to say back at the beginning of the summer, we actually installed in the counseling offices screens, clear screens to create the vision between clients and the therapist. However, there's still a requirement that we all have to wear a mask because it's an enclosed space. And the best of, and I think my office may actually be the biggest one of them. There is there are no 6 feet of space between the one chair and the other. So
right.
We are looking into like every single possible thing that we will need to ensure that we're safe and that the clients are safe and that the staff is safe. So it's going back to the question, like, yeah, we don't assume that anybody has been vaccinated, even if they have the proof, just because you really can't know for sure. And unfortunately, no, you cannot ask neither the staff nor the clients.
Something else that we do is we take temperatures before in-person appointments. And we also, the therapist cleans her hands and the client cleans with Purell before we go into the office. And then when we come out, we clean hands again. I don't know why, but we do. So we have a station set up right in the waiting room with the thermometer and the cleaning, the Purell and whatnot. And the other thing I just want to mention is we have a sign on the wall that says what our protocol is.
Yeah,
I don't think any client has ever read it, but if I wanted to, it's there. Jeremy, outlining what... outlining what we do and outlining what we expect the client does.
Right. I like that. Send that to us too.
Yeah. I like that, Rachel. Is that a huge document or is that just?
No, it's just a one sheet with bullets posted on the wall. I laminated it, put it on the wall.
Oh, it'd be great to see that. Send that.
Jeremy, I'm wondering what you guys are doing. You have a pretty robust counseling program over there. So
we can't hear you.
You know what? I think it's your volume's down potentially. No. Mm-mm. Well, while you're figuring that out, unbelievable. That's Karen, okay. You were going to say something. I'm sorry, Lane, but I saw Karen before.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something?
Well, yeah, this is a great conversation. I really appreciate this group. This is like the best group I belong to as well. But
And you don't have to pay to come.
Well, yeah, it stimulates a lot of thought and it's probably the most productive group I belong to, the best meeting. But we follow almost the same outline Rachel's describing, the same protocol with the people coming. But what I originally wanted to comment on was like we're doing a hybrid, some in-person, some mostly telehealth. I would say 85% telehealth, but for the few clients, it's a case by case. Sometimes it's children who are just really struggling with the overload of screen. It's just not working for them. Some are seniors who, same thing, no technology. And what we're finding, and then other factors, the people who we are seeing in person, even with the masks, as soon as we met the first time, it acknowledged this is weird, but they're used to it. I mean, we're all used to wearing masks by this point, and they've really offered such gratitude for the opportunity to be seen in person. Because for some of them, even though you can't see their face, like I realized at least two of the clients I've met during pandemic for the first time, I've never actually seen their faces. So I would not recognize them. Because one of them came to the door, she was standing far back and she's like, I forgot my mask. And I'm like,
Who are you?
That is not what I thought she looked like. I gave her a mask, but it's worked. And I think that you will all understand as clinicians, just the human energy in the room. So she had the mask, she's, you know, sobbing, which is very awkward with a mask. And I was kind of like, oh, is this airborne, you know, but the human connection made a big difference. And she told me recently, she said, if we were trying to do this over telehealth, I would not have done it. So it's kind of a lifesaver for her. And then for the people who do telehealth, we are also able to really expand our reach. Like my county, Sarasota County, where my JFCS is located, it's really far north. It goes over an hour south. A lot of those people, I mean, who can take 3 hours out of their day to go to a counseling appointment? Nobody. Right. So they're very grateful. So I guess the point I have, and I wonder if anybody's encountering it, I'm noticing we're already, like, the wheels are turning, reentry, and we have many other programs and who don't operate the same way a clinical department does. My concern as a director of my program is I know my staff are more than willing to meet with people at all different kinds of hours than we used to, you know, because of telehealth, see people in office and out of office, as far away, close by. But now, because the other programs operate more on an 8-to-5, there's kind of the expectation we're going to be in the office all the time, but we're also going to be seeing people out. Like, I think that there's going to be some education for the agency on, like, all these new, they're new opportunities, but they present challenges as well.
Right.
For setting limits, but also giving the clinicians the autonomy to build their own schedules. I'm noticing there's some resistance to that flexible schedule.
So I'm really glad you brought that up, Karen, because I think that the challenge and one of the things we have to pay attention to a lot is, which is the other part of the boundary thing, is the ability that all of our staff have to totally destroy themselves and burn out. And
or to be able to have the professional respect to be able to build a schedule that will work for them and their clients. Like, I have some clinicians.
And the agency.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's, we could very easily set healthy boundaries, but it's not going to look like an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday, you know? And the agency's like, well, wait, you know? But like, I have some clinicians, they're happy to do a 4-day, 10-hour shift. It works for them. It works for the clients, but it doesn't work for the agency.
So I have to say that since COVID, I had to do that. And my director, my CEO, you know, was questioning how I was working. And basically what I said to him is, you know, go look at the numbers. So that's, you know, what does it matter what hours I'm working? The number of clients and sessions that I am, you know, providing is clear in the statistics. So just look at the numbers.
Right. And it's so much better, I think. I remember when I was working at an agency, no one wanted to work at night, right? No one wants to come in, but so many of our clients wanted evening sessions. So now they can have them easily at home. So I think it's really a win-win if agencies are willing to be flexible and embrace it, actually.
Right. I've got some therapists that are seeing people on Sundays. If they want to do a couple of sessions on Sunday, like, why not?
So I'll jump in and say, Eve, I appreciate that you said that because I have
Jeremy, you're with us.
This is what happens when I'm go from Zoom to WebEx to Teams back to Zoom.
Oh.
My microphone just doesn't work. So thanks for your patience. But Eve, I'm glad that you said that because I felt like I was the only a clinical director who was struggling against other leadership that was like, we want our people in here working certain hours because it just because clinicians are going to be in their work mode when they're in the office, you know, in their offices here. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, they've been in work mode for the last year from home in their bedrooms, you know, seeing these clients, and our productivity is through the roof. So what does it matter what these, arbitrary rules are around, like, what, you know, when we should and shouldn't be in the office. So that's a battle that I've been having. So I'm glad that you helped put some voice to that too. But we're doing the same similar thing to what a lot of folks here are doing. We've staggered our staff in here. So we've had pods of people that are only here on certain days. Other days we're working remotely. Other days, like today, I'm here in the office. Today's my day. Tomorrow is my day. So I'm able to see some of my clinicians and supervise them in person rather than over the phone or through Zoom. So that's been a nice reconnection that I've been able to make. Being able to do like clinical supervision in person. It's amazing. It's like doing therapy in person. It's just an amazing difference. When we finally have clients that will be coming into our building, I'm guessing, and I'm pushing toward like mid-April or so, and we'll do very similar things. We can text through our EMR system to when clients are able to come in, so they know not to buzz through our doors until there's been the transition. And we have a clockwise circular flow throughout the building. And so our clinicians will escort their clients like through the whole building. We have spaces for hand sanitizing. There's the notifications of like the COVID checklist basically for all clients. And we're doing that in our reminder phone calls or the reminder texts that we sent to. So we have the COVID protocol being sent out like 3 or 4 different times, just saying, hey, if you're sick, don't come in. But, you know, and then all the 5 or 6 questions that are on there. So like for us in Rhode Island, our numbers are looking pretty good. Surrounding states are looking pretty good. So I'm feeling pretty safe about seeing people in person here in the agency. I see people in my private practice in person, and I'm able to manage that flow very easily on my own. And I make sure that I'm taking care of my sessions between, like cleaning things between sessions. What I try to do is actually in-person remote appointment, in-person remote appointment. And that gives me some time to between those appointments to wipe things down. So I'm not like going, so the person's not walking into a room that smells like Clorox, you know, it doesn't smell like cleaning supplies, which is, you know, so it gives the at least I'm smelling it when I'm in my room doing my, my Zoom appointment, which is fine. But anyway, so we're doing the same thing a lot of other folks are doing.
There are so many, I'm looking at the time, Lisa. I mean, there are so many interesting things to talk about in terms of this. Jeremy, you brought up two points that I was curious about, which may be for other meetings, but the whole issue of our electronic health records in terms of, I know there have been some questions about who's using which ones, how's that, you know, what are we liking? What are we not liking? What's working? What's not working in terms of that? Don't know whether that's something. And you said something else that I just lost what it was that was. Oh, yes. The whole issue, it's another boundary question that I have. The whole issue of what people, agencies are doing in the network in terms of your therapists having practice, your private practices, or are they allowed to? What are the non-compete issues? Do you have non-compete issues? I've been thinking a lot about those boundary related issues because some stuff has come up in our agency about that, whether you have prohibited practices in terms of your therapist being allowed to have practices outside your agency.
So, I guess it depends if it's full-time or contracted work, potentially. I don't know. Well, Rachel was going to say something.
Full-time therapists cannot have a private practice as their secondary employment because that would be in direct competition with what we do at JFS. They can work at another, they can have secondary employment. Like one of my therapists works for our mobile crisis team with the police. I mean, they can have other secondary employment, but it says in their employment contract, they can't have a private practice.
Right. In your catchment area. Right.
In our catchment area. And that's been there the whole time. I mean, that definitely pre-exists me. It's been there, I think, for a long time.
So those are just some, you guys always make me think about different things that we're all sort of, I know we're all dealing with. And Tara, you said something earlier that nobody responded to, and I heard it. I want you to know I heard it when you said, I don't want to come back to the office. So I'm like aware of the fact that there's probably a whole bunch of clinicians in my agency too, that really want to keep their practices virtual.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, am going to really miss my reindeer slippers.
Really? Well, I want to know my secret. I'm going to miss the opportunity to do a manicure every night.
There you go.
You see this? This was done during a board meeting. What do you think? Don't tell anybody. Shh. What happens in the clinical group stays in the clinical group.
And it's funny because I remember when this first happened a year ago, I thought to myself, oh, I'm going to hate this. I'm just going to hate it. But it just shows you can get used to anything. And I think ultimately a hybrid will not be a bad idea.
Listen, before everybody jumps off, how many of you are coming to the network conference? Yeah, and we have a clinical services showcase, which is someday. Lisa will tell us what day it is, and because I can't remember offhand, but we've got 8 different programs that are going to be doing a bam, 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 like 5-minute presentation about some real cool programs from their agencies, and would really welcome you all to come. And then we're going to have some clinical affinity networking time where we can all like
show get to know each other and not just talk about clinical issues, but talk about other things as well.
Ellie, you were very quiet today. You didn't share anything with us. Is everything okay with you?
Yeah, it's just really that we're at home still. We have not heard anything about going back. Part of that, I think, is that vaccines in Pennsylvania have been a mess. So, you know, the last we heard, we were tentatively going back in June, but there's been no like real movement toward that. So we're all basically where we were a year ago. So.
Gotcha. If this works for people, I know our next meeting, I think, is in May, and May 13th. And I keep it pretty broad in terms of topic because I think there's a lot of stuff going on right now. But if people want us to narrow it and have a particular topic, just shoot me or Lisa an email. I'm way into wanting to talk about like electronic health records, if anybody wants to do that ever. Got a thumbs up from Rachel, but that's always fun to talk about documentation and things like that. But I'm also aware of the fact that by May, you know, we all have to support each other in terms of our progressing through this. And I'm sure there'll be issues with insurances and cross stuff. So let's just stay in touch with each other and we'll figure it out as each day feels a little different.
So, absolutely. Thank you so much. What a nice meeting today. So happy Passover or Easter, whatever people celebrate. Yeah.
Easter.
Okay. And Lisa, if you can send me that list, that would be wonderful.
I'm going to send it to everybody, I think. That would be a good idea.
Yeah. Karen's gone. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.